This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Welcome to the podcast, Crime Salad, where we talk true crime. I'm your host, Ashley, and with me always is my husband and partner in crime, Ricky. The purpose of this podcast is to honor the victims through ethical storytelling in the hopes of preventing future tragedies. We want our stories to resonate and educate others in hopes that some of these similar cases with identifiable patterns can be prevented. Now, before we jump in, please let us warn you that this is a true crime podcast. The details of this episode may be triggering to some listeners. Listener discretion advised. All right, Ricky, are you ready?
I'm ready.
This one's pretty tough.
It's a little too close to home.
Yeah, it is. This case is going to bring us to the small city of Youngstown, Ohio. It is a place known for the college YSU. You may have heard of it.
Youngstown State University, the Penguins.
And it's fairly close to us. So it's quite shocking when something like this happens so close. It's kind of like...
It makes it a lot
surreal.
More real.
Yeah, it's real. It's surreal. What's also scary is, like, these people could get out of jail, which is really, really scary to think.
Yeah, it is.
All right, so please be warned that this case is definitely disturbing on the more disturbing end, so listener discretion advised. Today's episode revolves around the murder of Shannon Graves, a young woman whose life was tragically cut short. The details surrounding her death are both shocking and unsettling, leaving many in the community grappling with a sense of disbelief and outrage. As we dive into the details of this case today, brace yourself for a harrowing journey through the dark underbelly of crime and justice. This is the story of Shannon Graves, a strong and independent woman who was confronted with pure evil. Throughout her adolescence, her desire to become an adult and be self-reliant was evident. Priority number one was moving out and supporting herself as she planned to get a place with her friends. She intended to begin her cosmetology career after receiving her cosmetology license in 2016. Ricky and I have always kept an eye on this case, but we noticed that it's one that has always been put on the back burner. There hasn't been a lot of public information released, and it's probably due to the nature of the crime, as well as it's always been an ongoing investigation for some time, just until a few years ago. So we decided to stick with the facts that came from the affidavit and a few helpful details from watching the Investigation Discovery episode that covered this case. And you can check out ID Channel Season 1, Episode 2, called Ice Cold Killers, A Body in the Basement, to get more visuals. And you can also hear from the victim's half-sister, Debbie, who has always been a strong advocate for getting justice for Shannon. She maintains the Facebook group page titled Justice for Shannon, which includes 1,500 followers. It is truly devastating to imagine the emotional toll this case has taken on Shannon's loved ones. The resilience they have shown in the face of such a tragedy is commendable, and I hope that they find solace and support during this difficult time. What happened to Shannon was the doings of pure evil. Her life was cut short at just 28 years old on a cold day, February 24th, 2017. So Shannon had met a man by the name of Arturo Novoa in April of 2016. And 5 months into their relationship, this would bring us to September, is when he moved into Shannon's apartment in Youngstown, Ohio. It seemed that their relationship was a bit rocky, and it was reported that Arturo was mean and physically violent towards Shannon. 3 months later, in December, the relationship ended, and so Arturo moved out and moved in with a longtime girlfriend named Katrina Layden. But after a week, he would move back in with Shannon. So as you can see, there seemed to be a bit of a love triangle Arturo got himself in.
Sounds like he couldn't make his mind up.
Possibly. And as the cold days continued, court records show that on the 24th of February was the day that Shannon was murdered. Now, just to set the scene on what kind of guy Arturo was, on April 29th, 2017, and this is after the fact that Shannon was murdered, Arturo had a run-in with the police. He was out driving around, and a police officer turned his lights on for a traffic violation. And Arturo sped off, abandoned the vehicle, ran by foot, and he was later tasered, arrested, and charged with fleeing and looting. But what was he really running from, was the question.
Yeah, it seems pretty extreme.
He was released on bond, and after that, he got to chill in Shannon's apartment with his girl Trina, all of Shannon's stuff, and Shannon's dog, having a good time, but there was no Shannon. Supposedly, Shannon left everything behind and ran off with her ex-boyfriend. But it was becoming a concern when Shannon's belongings were all left behind, including her car and her dog that remained at her apartment. And it only became more and more strange when Shannon's apartment continued to be a place to call home for Arturo Novoa, Shannon's dog Molly, and now a woman by the name of Katrina Layden, and her kids as well. You know, the girl Arturo was living with a week after Shannon and him broke up. Yeah, that girl. But Shannon wasn't there. Shannon's family continued to question these folks about Shannon's whereabouts. It was quite disturbing that Katrina was now living in her apartment and brought in her kids, and they seemed to help themselves using Shannon's car to drive around town. Not only that, Shannon's credit cards were used and her WIC benefits were used. Shannon's dad then asked Arturo about Shannon's car, and Arturo said that she left it here and her boyfriend picked her up. Then he asked about her dog, Molly, and Arturo said that he has him, and he just assumed that she would come back and get her dog whenever she was ready. As time went on, there was hearsay that Shannon just took off with her ex. Everybody was just, that's what they went with.
Word on the street.
But the family felt in their heart that Shannon would never leave her dog, Molly, behind. Molly the pit bull was her baby. Her friends said that Molly was that one dog who went everywhere with Shannon, and so it came off very unlike Shannon to leave Molly behind. So as the family grew suspicious, her father and a few of his friends went to the house to get Molly, and she is currently staying with Shannon's half-sister, Debbie. So as the cold winter months started to warm up, it was June 22nd, 2017, when Shannon's half-sister, Debbie DePaul, filed a missing persons report with the Youngstown Police Department. And the search for Shannon got the attention it needed. Debbie and Shannon's former fiancé, John Scarrata, began to look for Shannon and helped with the investigation as much as they could. There was no record of Shannon being admitted to any nearby hospitals, and friends reported that they haven't seen her since around Christmas time. So much valuable time has passed for investigators, but for the people involved, this was the time when they started to scramble to hide any piece of evidence that would point to them as suspects of being involved with Shannon Graves' disappearance. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in detail in just a minute. So, John Scarrata, he was a guy who Shannon lived with previously before meeting Arturo Novoa. John ended up going to prison for drug-related charges and was expecting to live with Shannon when he got out. Being that he had a bad past, he definitely was a person of interest at first. But at the same time, the police also have to talk to everyone in Shannon's circle. He recalls the last time hearing from her was around December, just like a few of her friends stated. John showed a big interest in Shannon's disappearance, and he played a big part in the investigation. And then it was July 29th, 2017. Now, before we go any further, let's just give you an extra content warning for this next part because it is disturbing for sure. On this day, detectives got a chilling call after homeowners inspected a padlocked deep freezer that was brought into their basement. They shockingly discovered a human foot with a leg attached that was inside a garbage bag. Police arrive at the Campbell, Ohio home to investigate this grisly discovery, and they pull out a number of black garbage bags with dismembered human remains. The scene was quite gruesome, as detectives had to take apart the bags and photograph the evidence as it was found. The legs and the arms were separated from the torso. Anyone who saw this terrifying scene is likely to have been profoundly affected by what they saw. While pulling out the black heavy bags containing frozen remains, they came upon an orange 5-gallon bucket, and inside that bucket was part of a human skull. The torso and the head appeared to be burned with an acid-like substance. A detective described it as, quote, truly disheartening that a human can do this to another human.
I mean, to take the time to mutilate somebody's body is like another level of evil.
It's horrifying. Now, at first, they didn't have immediate confirmation as to who this body belonged to. At the time, there was actually a few missing persons in the area, so it could have been one of them, or this could have been an entirely new case. But what they knew for sure was that someone had been dismembered and placed in this freezer. And so this all needed to be closely investigated because a shocking murder had taken place. Once the remains were brought to a medical examiner to be autopsied, the remains had to first defrost, and the fingers were injected with saline so that they could get an accurate fingerprint. This gave them answers as to who these remains belonged to, and then they got confirmation that this was Shannon Graves. Because of her condition and the way that her body was dismembered, the medical examiner was not able to determine how she died, but the gruesome nature of how she was left stored in a freezer to be forgotten tells us that this was an act of cold-hearted evil. After months of wondering what had happened to Shannon Graves and where she went, a phone call like this must have come as a complete shock to her loved ones. It's believed that once family and friends of Shannon Graves grew more and more concerned, and the police were getting more involved, Arturo made the decision to use Jill and Ken's basement to store this freezer containing Shannon's body. So Jill and Ken Eschenbaugh, they were the homeowners of the house where the mysterious freezer containing Shannon's remains were found. And of course, they were brought down to the station to be interviewed separately. And they both explained to the investigators that it was Anthony Gonzalez, or Tony G, who got permission to bring this freezer to their house. Unknowingly, Jill and Ken were simply being used to conceal the grim reality that was stored in their very own basement. Arturo, or Tony G, whoever you want to call him, he was known as a local rapper.
Of course he was. Well, now he gets to be a local murderer of Youngstown.
So apparently about 5 days after Arturo dropped this freezer off at Jill and Ken's house, Jill and Ken decided to open it. And according to the Investigation Discovery episode, the detective described that there was a latch that was screwed onto the freezer so that a padlock could be attached to the latch, keeping the freezer secure. So one thing that I did find interesting was Oxygen stated that the wife of the couple ended up opening up the freezer to look for ground meat to make spaghetti sauce. But the homeowners simply unscrewed the screws of the latch to open the freezer. And Ken's first thought was, who stores their meat in garbage bags? That seems strange. And when he pulled the bag open, that's when they discovered this frightening truth. This was not meat. This was a human body in this freezer.
Oh, wow. You know, it's weird. I always thought they were suspicious of this freezer, and that's why they went down to, like, check it. But here, they were just looking for meat. Like, what a shock. You know what I can't stop thinking about? How do you get the freezer into their basement? Like, that's a weird thing to ask.
But you know what's even more suspicious? Bringing a locked freezer over at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, so they probably had to wake them up for this.
I don't think they did. I feel like they didn't.
So how'd they do it then?
He had a little help from his friends. So when the police conducted a search warrant at Shannon's apartment, that is when Arturo and his clan got a bit frazzled. So they asked their good friends, Ken and Jill, if they wouldn't mind if they could store this freezer that they have at their place. And they explained, well, we have a situation where our electricity has turned off and we have a freezer full of meat. Wouldn't that be a shame to have everything defrost?
Oh, okay. Wait, so there's more than just one person involved here?
Yeah, there's actually three other people who have been involved in this case for one reason or another. Now, how Arturo was friends with Jill and Ken, we have no clue. Maybe it was a family friend sort of thing, but they were very good friends with Arturo for sure around this time, and he thought that he was safe. But when the homeowners took a peek inside that freezer, it was game over for him and his accomplices.
They obviously didn't trust him that much that they looked.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I would be pretty curious if someone brought over a freezer and at 3 o'clock in the morning. The police traced this freezer back to Arturo Novoa, and he was brought in for questioning. And he put on the facade that he had no knowledge of this body that was in this freezer or anything about it. And he was actually quite aggravated that he was pulled out of work for this. And during the interview, he seemed like so irritated and he complained about how long this would take. And then the interview stopped when Arturo requested to get a hold of a lawyer. So while searching the apartment where Arturo stayed, a few things were brought to the detective's attention. There were a few books on witchcraft, as well as what appeared to be spots of human blood found as smudges on the wall, on the floor, and on the mattress. And there was a meat cleaver that was stuck in the top of the doorframe. Now, in this apartment, they also found a rent receipt that was for a new apartment that Katrina had rented. It was the bottom floor of a house. And when investigators checked out this new property, there were a few telling things that gave detectives a clue that this is where the deep freezer was originally kept. For instance, there were scratch marks from moving a heavy piece of furniture on the brown, freshly painted wood floor. And there was a new manual for the same exact deep freezer. And there was a basket insert that would hold something in the freezer that was obviously taken out to make more room. It's believed by investigators that this freezer was moved once the police started to get more involved after Shannon's sister submitted a missing persons report. So what better place to store it than someone's basement who would never be suspected as a criminal? Someone who would never be tempted to open it. And of course, even if they tried, they wouldn't be able to open it because it was padlocked. It was secured. So during Ken's interview, he brought up that he knew that Arturo dated a girl named Katrina Layden. Ken refers to Katrina as Trina for short. And he also knows that the relationship was very close, and he has no doubt that she knew about this freezer and what was inside. We know that the freezer was purchased in Katrina's name, so there is definitely some evidence that she was involved in attempting to hide the evidence. In the affidavit, it's stated that Arturo originally used the freezer that was in Shannon's home, but once that missing persons report was filed, this is when they got scared, and so they purchased a second freezer to hide her remains at a rental. They must have had a hunch that the police would be looking closely at Shannon's home. And it's believed by investigators that since Shannon's body was dismembered into sections, that they strategically transported her remains little by little over several months using Shannon's own car and the use of her trunk to the new rental that Katrina was renting.
So did anyone live in that new rental?
It seems that the only purpose for this rental was to store a freezer that contained Shannon's body. The landlord of this apartment questioned Katrina about this as to why it hadn't been used and thought it was kind of weird that someone would get a rental and there was only a freezer inside the house, a warranty for the freezer, and a black suitcase.
Right. This probably isn't the type of neighborhood where he is used to having someone rent a place that they didn't use, right?
Yeah, I would say that it was definitely suspicious. Now, when police get to questioning Katrina, she never admitted to being involved in any way. She continued to defend herself, saying that she has kids and she would never do something like this. And eventually, she puts the blame on her lover boy, stating that Arturo murdered Shannon. And she explained that he asked her to come over. And when she did, he pointed over to the bathroom to find Shannon dead. And on the other hand, Arturo said that Shannon was beaten to death with a hammer by Katrina. And the lies just kept coming. There was no accurate story from both ends, so the police didn't rely on their lies, but they focused strongly on the evidence.
So they're turning on each other.
Yeah, lots of he said, she said. So Andrew Herman, we haven't talked about him yet. He is a new face who was brought into this investigation, and he came off as a bit creepy. He was friends with Arturo, and he confirmed with investigators that on March 1st, 2017, he and Arturo burned a bunch of Shannon's things at a friend's house to attempt to get rid of the evidence. They asked their good friends if they could have a bonfire, and this wasn't like a cozy sit by the fire, have some marshmallows. This was a fire that was so big that the fire department actually showed up to make sure that everything was okay.
Wow.
And I'm assuming that's all they did because nothing really happened out of that. Well, the next day, the people living at this residence checked out the fire pit where the night before there had been a raging fire. And they felt very curious about this random bonfire because they kept seeing them removing things from bags and totes and throwing things in the fire. And so they scooped up the ashes and put the ashes in a laundry basket, which was later recovered by police. And one of those items didn't seem to get touched by the fire. It was a bracelet with letter beads that spelled out Shannon. Now, another person kind of came into the picture. Andrew's wife, Michelle Eilenfeld, was never directly involved with the murder, but she made her way into the case and was charged with obstruction of justice for lying before a grand jury and intimidation of a witness. Supposedly, she was threatening someone who, at the time, was talking to the police. And what's sickening is she seemed to really enjoy her time in court as she smiled when she walked in. It was kind of creepy. Michelle received a sentence for 2 years in prison, 6 months in a halfway house, and 5 years of community controlled for her actions in this case, which is basically probation in Ohio. Andrew Herman helped in the process of dismembering Shannon's body in the garage of Katrina's home. And before they did all this, court documents state that Arturo and Katrina shaved Shannon's head, wrapped her in garbage bags, and put her in the trunk of her own car. Then they drove the body to Katrina's garage so that they could cut up her body. And after they were done, they transported the bags which held dismembered body parts to Shannon's home and placed her in the deep freezer there. And this was all done sometime between March 1st and March 11th of 2017. Ricky, do you just want to take a guess on the sentence that Andrew got?
I feel like it's like 10 years.
Well, very close. He got 12 years.
Wow. That's it?
That's it. Now, evidence confirms that Katrina Layton ordered 12 gallons of sulfuric acid from the local Walmart under the name Chicken Man for pickup. This order was ready on March 11th, 2017, and because Chicken Man was purchasing a bunch of sulfuric acid, the Walmart employee felt that this was a good time to request an ID. So Katrina Layton gave her ID, which confirmed that it was Katrina who picked this up. Now, this sulfuric acid was used as an attempt to destroy Shannon's body so there wouldn't be any evidence of this murder. And they can continue their lives by going with Shannon just up and left. The plan was to use the sulfuric acid to dissolve Shannon's body, but it seems like the 12 gallons that they purchased wouldn't be enough to dispose the body. A portion of Shannon's skull remained, as did her torso, and so it was decided to put her in that freezer.
So who buys 12 gallons of sulfuric acid anyways? Like, how does that not raise some type of red flag?
Yeah, you think that she would do more than just get the ID, like at least call the police and mention, hey, this is a little suspicious, you know, just to report it. So interesting fact, it's actually illegal in certain states.
Is it really?
Yeah. And it's mostly used for industrial purposes, actually, not for just anybody to buy, like for fertilizer, insecticides, pharmaceuticals, and things like car batteries. But for someone just to purchase 12 gallons of sulfuric acid, that's definitely a red flag.
I mean, it could be a red flag, but now that I'm thinking about it, like maybe some small restaurant, you know, they're not buying like industrial and they're just buying from Walmart, you know, like maybe they have drains that are clogged or something like that.
Yeah, because it is advertised as a drain cleaner too.
Oh, so. Plus he called himself, Chicken Man.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe that was like some ruse to make you think it was a restaurant.
But isn't that like even more suspicious? Chicken Man?
I mean, honestly, yeah, it'd be hidden in plain sight would probably be better, like use a real name.
I kind of feel like that they were like pretending that they were in this TV show or something. Doesn't it seem like it?
Well, I mean, anytime I hear of someone wanting to dissolve a body, all I think of is Breaking Bad.
Right. The main suspect in this case, while he was being questioned by investigators, he admitted that he actually dextered the garage before cutting up Shannon.
Dextered. Oh, you mean like the whole plastic
yeah.
cloth?
Yeah, remember how he like layered everything in plastic nothing would get blood on
it? Was like a controlled crime scene.
The Youngstown police and everyone involved did an amazing job as they diligently worked this case and sorted through the overwhelming evidence. Investigators believe that this murder happened due to a love triangle situation where Katrina could not handle the attention that Shannon was getting.
Oh, so this was like a jealousy thing.
Yeah. She seemed very jealous that Arturo was spending a lot of time with her, you know, moving in with her, hanging out with her dog. So they believe that this murder was based on that. And it was a team effort to clean it all up. An extensive investigation and gathering of the evidence were key components in securing convictions against these evil people. Here's the sentences they got. Andrew Herman was sentenced to 12 years for the abuse of a corpse. Katrina Layton was sentenced to 18 years for tampering with evidence and obstruction of justice. And Arturo was sentenced to 48 years to life in prison for the murder of Shannon Graves. It makes me question, should our justice system give a harsher sentence for something so extreme? I mean, this is a really brutal murder and they just... This is horrible.
Yeah, it makes me wonder, like, he got 48 years to life, right? And then Katrina got 18 years. Like, that's such a big gap. And, like, to me, they're both, like, they were both very involved.
Yeah, you're right. I could imagine a few years in prison is nowhere near a walk in the park, but it just seems like it doesn't fit the brutality and the pure evil of this crime. Not only did the family and friends of Shannon have to live with this trauma and grief of losing an amazing friend and family member in this horrible and disturbing way, they also had to wait 2 long years to bring this case to trial. They had to reopen wounds that were healing because of time. 2 long years feels like the longest time when they were waiting for answers for justice, and it only adds to the hurt. Although Shannon was tragically taken away from this world and it can't be undone, Arturo thought that his sentence could be changed up a little. A man who is sentenced to life, who is now 37 years old from the recording of this episode, attempted to appeal his case twice. It makes me so sad to say that Shannon would never get to see the age of 37. Anyways, he attempted to appeal his case recently and thankfully he was denied. According to court documents, Arturo argued that the trial court made a mistake in rejecting his request to withdraw his guilty plea before his resentencing. The first time that he made an appeal was in 2021, and he had part of his sentencing merged, but it didn't affect his prison time like he hoped, thankfully. The Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost stated that this is one of the most brutal cases in memory. We hope that Shannon's sister and Shannon's loved ones can find some comfort and peace after they've experienced so much from this cruel and hateful murder.